Today on Family Talk.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Family Talk, the radio production of James Dobson Family Institute. I'm your host, Dr. James Dobson, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us for this broadcast because you're going to enjoy it. As you well know, Reverend Billy Graham was one of the most well-known Christian evangelists of all time. There are not enough words to describe the eternal impact this man had on the kingdom of God, nor can we quantify the millions of lives that he touched around the world with the good news of Jesus. I know that when he changed his address from this earth to heaven, there's no doubt about the fact that he was greeted with the words from Jesus, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." With me today is a very special guest to talk about the legacy of Billy Graham. I'm speaking of his grandson, Will Graham. He is currently the vice president of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. He's traveled around the world as an evangelist since 2006 and serves as the executive director of the Billy Graham Training Center at The Cove. He's a graduate of Liberty University and is now on the board of trustees for his alma mater. Will also received his Master of Divinity degree from Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in 2001. Will is with us today to talk about the life of his beloved grandfather through his new book, Redeemed: Devotions for the Longing Soul. And this is a book we're going to be talking about today, and you need to read it. Will, I'm so glad that you joined us today and that we have a chance to chat. You and I have met several times. I consider you a friend, and you're doing the work of the Lord all around the world. And as a matter of fact, you're leaving after this program, I guess tomorrow morning, heading for northern Canada, aren't you?
That is, and I'm so thankful to be here, grateful for your friendship, thankful for your love for my family over the years. We love your ministry, and I'm an evangelist as well, and so I like to go places where most people don't go, and I'm going to northern Canada. I'll be in Rankin Inlet, which is
not many people up there.
No, 3,000 in this town, and
you're used to speaking to a whole lot bigger crowd than that.
Well, usually I do, but up there, 3,000 would be a great number to have up there because it'd be the whole town. But you know, and I like to go to places where we go where we're invited. Even my grandfather only went where he was invited, and so we had a chance to go up there. We were invited to come. And I've been really praying for a long time for God to allow me to go and to minister to the Inuit people, which is the indigenous people there up north in Canada, and to preach among them. And so I'm going to go up there. No Billy Graham evangelist has ever been there, so this will be the first time we've been there.
Well, our prayers will go with you. We're going to talk today about your grandfather. Shirley and I were blessed to be invited to attend his funeral. Hmm. What was the date of that?
I think March 2nd was the actual funeral. He died on February 21st, and it was about a 10-day funeral process, you might say.
So I had just come back from Israel and was pretty worn out, and the funeral was just several days later. And I'm telling you, I think that was the most inspirational service of that kind that I have ever attended. Did it affect you that way?
Well, it did. I tell you, that was like I said, for us, it was a 10-day. I was actually, my father and I were out of town that day, the day that my granddaddy died. We happened to be both in Dallas-Fort Worth area. I was going to be speaking I was going to be doing the chapel service for Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary.
And I was in Jerusalem.
And so you were in Jerusalem. And that morning, I got the phone call early in the morning that my grandfather had passed away.
Yeah.
And the rule was that as soon as we found out, we had to come home. That was the rule. We didn't speak. We didn't go anywhere. We just came home. Fortunate for me, my dad was there doing some flight training. My dad's a pilot. I'm a pilot, but my dad's a pilot. And
you're speaking of Franklin.
Franklin, my father Franklin, he's a pilot. And so he was doing some flight training with the rest of the pilot crew that he has. And he just happened to be at Dallas-Fort Worth, too, that same day.
Really?
And so we met at the airport and we flew home together. And then that really started 10 days of hard work, you might say. We've been working on my granddaddy. I'm laughing because we've been working on my granddaddy's funeral for about 35 years. So we were on version 2000, I think, by now. But and I always joke that, all his pallbearers had died. He outlived all of,
Did he really?
He outlived. So we had to go to Team B. Mm. Well, I always joke that his last Team B player died right before he did. And so now we're on Team C, and the only ones that were left were the grandkids. So the grandkids got to be the pallbearers. But we had been planning this funeral for a long time. And I don't mean that in a morbid way. We knew this was going to be a lot of work, and we couldn't do it at the last minute.
How many people were there?
I don't even know.
It was thousands.
It was thousands. But I remember one of the things, and every time we moved my granddad's body, it was like a little mini service. And so when we picked him up at the funeral home to bring him back to the Cove in Asheville, North Carolina, where I work, he laid in state there for a few days. And I remember we put him in state there, and my dad and I were the only ones in the auditorium, which you've spoken in, and everybody else left. Dad and I were just sitting there. And my dad looked at me and said, "Son, that's why we plan these things. That's why we plan every detail. You understand me?" And he's trying to teach me.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, we haven't followed anything in the plan so far. We've had lived everything so far the whole day.
Everybody I talked to there was just deeply blessed by what took place. It was very fitting for your grandfather.
My grandfather only wanted the gospel to be preached. And this is something that, my granddaddy always, in his whole life, he always wanted to preach one more time. He just, when he kind of retired in 2005, he still did a few more crusades, but he did them with my father. But he always wanted to preach one more time. And when it came down to it, he couldn't read his sermons anymore. But what was amazing was, this is how good God is, Dr. Dobson. My granddaddy, when he died, in a sense, the whole world was watching Billy Graham clips, YouTube clips. Everybody was sharing their stories about Billy Graham. For 10 days, the whole world was talking about Billy Graham. And it was all good stuff.
He probably reached more people that way than he had done otherwise.
And on the day of his funeral, the day that you were there, on that cold day when you were getting pneumonia, my granddad, on the BGA website, the BillyGraham.org website, Franklin Graham Facebook Live, Billy Graham Facebook Live, on those three things that we can watch, we can watch the numbers.
Yeah.
We had 5 million devices logged on watching it live.
Unbelievable.
So this would be his largest crusade live that he's ever done, and it didn't cost him a dime because it was done by the internet, and he did it from the other side of heaven. So God allowed him to preach one more time. It was his own funeral. And it didn't cost him a dime. He did it from the other side of heaven. That's how good our God is. He gave my granddaddy one more opportunity to preach, and he did it from the grave.
Well, the Lord was on his life right from the very beginning. It was amazing. I lived in Los Angeles when he broke on the scene in 1949. Mm-hmm. I believe it was 49.
That's right.
And he was at a tent in downtown Los Angeles, mm-hmm. on Hill Street.
That's right, Washington Hill.
William Randolph Hearst, the newspaper man, owned all these big newspapers, decided to put his stamp on Graham, and that gave him really worldwide interest and exposure right from the very beginning. And all of a sudden, he was a big, well-known evangelist. And that didn't go to his head, did it?
No, it didn't. You're right. William Randolph Hearst, he was like the Rupert Murdoch of his day. Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox News, Sky News, and big media mogul today. William Randolph Hearst. A lot of people in California probably would know about Hearst Castle.
Yes.
William Randolph Hearst. And he said the famous lines, "Puff Graham." In other words, go write nice things about Billy Graham. And a lot of people thought that William Randolph Hearst came to the crusade and he was converted or something like that. We don't know. My grandfather never met him.
It was really not probably a religious motive. For some reason, he just took a liking to
Billy. He did.
Billy.
And I think that's just God's favor, giving my granddad favor among men. And it was one of those things, because in 1949, when the Los Angeles Crusade started, and next year will be the 70th anniversary of that. September 24th, 1949 was the first day of the crusade. It was scheduled for 2 weeks, and they extended it to 8 weeks. And during that time, at the first of the 2 weeks, nobody knew of Billy Graham. He was a nobody. By the end of the 8th week, the whole country knew about Billy Graham because every paper in the country, from New York to Washington, D.C., to Atlanta, to L.A., everybody was talking about Billy Graham and what God was doing there.
You know, I was aware of it. I was just a child, really, but I took it all in. And he was interviewed by the Los Angeles Times, apparently right after that or in that era. Mm. And he was asked a question of what he was afraid of. I'll never forget his answer. It had an impact on my entire life. I remember it to this moment. He said, "My greatest fear is that I will have all of this visibility and influence, and I will do something to hurt the cause of Christ. And that is my biggest fear." I've carried that with me all these years because though I haven't had that kind of exposure, I've had a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking along one time at the Christian Booksellers Convention, and my stuff and my picture were all around, and the Lord spoke to me. And this is what he said. Man, he didn't use words, but I never forgot it. He said, "I have chosen to make you visible for my purposes. What you see around you is something I'm doing, and I'm telling you, don't mess it up." I don't know what words God uses when he says something like that, but man, I got it.
Yeah.
I knew he was saying, "You have the ability now to really hurt my kingdom. Don't do it." Have you ever felt those?
Yeah, I feel it all the time. And it's not a fear of God, it's a fear of myself. You know, the fear that I'm going to make one stupid mistake. And that can cost me my family, cost me my ministry, cost me my testimony, bring shame to the name of Christ. And that's the last thing I ever want to do. I think every one of us is a grandchildren. There's 19 grandchildren. I think all 19 would say they never want to disappoint their grandfather. And he would never be disappointed. You know, I mean, he loved all his grandchildren. But I think that we all had that fear that we would do something that would bring shame to the name of Billy Graham. And
what was your relationship with him?
I was very close with him. And I say that not in a prideful way. I was geographically closer. And so I'm his namesake. I'm William Franklin Graham IV. My father's William Franklin Graham III. Billy Graham is actually a William Franklin Graham Jr. A lot of people don't realize that, but he's a junior. My son is William Franklin Graham
V.
So, I mean, they're... Now it's his problem if he wants to have sons, and that's his problem. But you know, but I had a close relationship with my grandfather. One, because I had both sets of my grandparents living within a mile of each other, and so I always, when I went to go see one grandparent when I was misbehaving, they got tired of me. I went to the other grandparents. When they got tired of me, I could go back to the other grandparent. So I was always close to all my grandparents. So geographically, I only lived about an hour and a half away from them. So I was very close to them that standpoint. Compared to the other grandkids who lived a lot further off, I was of the grandkids. My father Franklin, my brothers and my siblings and I, we were the closest geographically, so we got to spend more time with them. Also, because of my father's work of traveling around the world and being at these different crusades, I would go with my father Franklin, and I would go to my granddad's crusades in other countries or in different parts of the country,
just as Franklin did with your grandfather.
That's right. And so I just kind of tagged along. So I got to see my granddaddy in different parts of the world, and where some of the other grandkids didn't have that opportunity all the time. And I didn't have it all the time. I had schooling to do and stuff like that. But so I got to see him quite a bit. And he didn't love me more than others. I just got to spend more time with him just because I was physically right down the road, or I was visiting my other grandparents, and I would go up and check on them.
Talk about your call to the ministry and especially to the evangelistic field. Did your grandfather play any role in that at all?
No, not at all. Matter of fact,
did he ever give you any advice?
He did give me some advice. And it's interesting that most people say, "Well, you're going into the family business." And I try to tell people, I was like, "No, this is not a family business. It's a businesses are something you can pass on to your children. You know, like if you own a tire business or a restaurant, you can inherit that from your father when he passes away. But with a ministry, they belong to God. So when my grandfather dies, it just doesn't mean that Franklin Graham gets it next because it belongs to God. God gives it to people. In this case, God's given it to my dad. Mm-hmm. Whether God gives it to me, I don't know. When it comes to my calling in life, it's interesting that my dad did everything humanly possible to discourage me to doing it. And I think it was, and I don't mean that in a negative sense, but he didn't want to do it because it was expected yes. of us. He was trying to make sure that this was what God was doing. So it wasn't that he was trying to discourage us in the sense of like, no, don't be an evangelist or something like that. But he would never bring it up. He would never put any pressure on us to do it. Matter of fact, he would tell his staff, if anyone talks to Will Graham or any of the kids, if you talk to Will Graham without talking to me about doing, you know, some type of speaking, you're fired. I mean, he wanted to protect us because he had pressure put on him as a young kid. You know, when the day he was born, letters came in and said, oh, great, we got Billy Jr. You got some big shoes to fill. You know, can't wait. You know, the pressure was automatically on the day he was born was automatically placed on him to be like his to be like his father.
Well, really. You say in your book here that you struggled with the call.
Well,
Did I understand that correctly?
I'm not sure if I struggled with it like my dad did. I didn't struggle with that way. What I did was trying to figure out, God, what do you want me to do in life? I felt called early in life, and I surrendered to my life to Christ on January 11th, 1981, right before I turned 6 years old. But then I was trying to figure out, God, what do you want me to do in life? You know, well, Lord, what do you want me to do? And so I look back, and I don't have like one clear picture like this is it, but I see breadcrumbs. And I can start connecting the dots, and I see how God was working in my life when I didn't realize it at the time. And I can look back and say, man, God had all this figured out. But I tell people, God, I became a pastor. That's when I went into full-time ministry. I was pastoring a church in Raleigh, North Carolina. I tell God, he tricked me. And I say that with a smile on my face because God didn't show me the full thing, what he had in store for me. Because if he did, I'd been like Jonah. I would have run the other way.
He never does.
He never does. And so God knew me. And so God eased me into it. I became a pastorate, and I love the pastorate. I still miss the pastorate today. If God ever calls me away from a full-time evangelism, like working for the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, I would say, Lord, I would love to go back and pastor a church. I love pastoring a church.
You know, people always ask me if I was going to be a preacher like my dad was, who was a well-known evangelist in our denomination. And I felt some pressure from that. But my dad never, ever even asked me about it because the same thing that he was thinking. And the Lord kind of tricked me, too, because he called me into the field of child development and parenting and all those things, which I studied in graduate school. And I had started Focus on the Family, and it was several years that went by. I think it was 6 years when I went by, and I was teaching people how to raise their kids and how to stay married and things related to the family. And I suddenly realized that there were a lot of people who were driving down the freeway and spinning the dial and heard me and got interested in what I was saying, but they didn't know Jesus. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I saw that there is a bigger purpose here. I also was trying to win people to Christ, even though he never called me to be a minister.
Right.
So I think he had a similar plan. All of my family had been ministers. I mean, for four generations on my mother's side,
wow,
including my grandmother. And then it came to me, and I never felt that call. But come to think of it, maybe I did.
Just in a different format.
Yeah. Well, so the advice that you were given was what?
Well, when I was pastoring a church, and God called me away from the church, I remember cutting grass one day, and God just spoke to my heart. I mean, like, it was not an audible voice in my ears. It was like a audible voice in my heart.
Yes.
And I just felt it clear as day. And it said, Will, what I've now sent you to the church to learn, you've now learned, and it's time to go help your father. And I was like, I don't want to work for my father. He doesn't pay well. Plus, I don't want to work for my dad. I mean, yeah. I like being on my own in a sense. And so from that standpoint, you know, I was struggling with my calling because I didn't want to do the next step. And I knew that God called me to come and help my dad. And so I talked to the other pastor that was kind of my mentor. and asked him, I said, you know, I need to resign and go, and I need to go work for my dad now. God's called me to do this. And I didn't want to do it. I really enjoyed where I was. I love being a pastor. But this is what God told me to do, so I got to do it. And so he said, well, why don't you go talk to your granddaddy? And I'm thinking to myself, I was like, God's already told me what to do. It doesn't matter what Billy Graham says. But I was like, if you're going to pay me to take a few days off, which he said, do, take a few days off, and go talk to your granddad. So I drove up to Montreat, North Carolina, and talked to him. And I said, Daddy Bill, this is what's – I call him Daddy Bill. That's what we as grandchildren refer to my grandfather as Daddy Bill. And I said, Daddy Bill, you know, this is what God's leading on my heart, is to leave the local church and to come and work for the Billy Graham, or to help my dad. I didn't know whether it was going to be at the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association or at Samaritan's Purse, both organizations my father runs.
Yes.
And I work for the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association now. And he said, well, Will, he said, that'd be a wonderful thing. We'd love to have you if that's where, if this is where God's leading you. He said, I would like to give you two words of advice. One is, he said, you need to read the Bible and study the Bible. You need to know it really well. He said, I wish I knew the Bible as well as your grandmother, Ruth, that is, my grandmother Ruth. He said, I wish I knew as good as Ruth did, because she was a real student of God's Word. It wasn't my granddaddy. He was a student of God's Word, but Ruth was the one that shone in the family. She knew it inside and out, and it was a huge help to my grandfather. And he said, the second thing is this. He said, you need to do less preaching, and you need to do more praying. He said, we as an organization could have done so much more if we spent more time on our knees and if I did less preaching. He said, I should have taken less speaking engagement and spent more time in prayer. And boy, that's one that hits me between the eyes. And because here's Billy Graham. He's done all these wonderful things. And he said, we could have done more if we had actually done less.
Right. You know, less speaking. We can all take that advice.
And so those are the things I try to... And to be honest, Dr. Dobson, I'm not sure if I live up to that expectation that he had for me. And
tell me if the evangelistic field, which is what we called it in my dad's case, if that was a difficult life for you.
No, it hasn't been for me. And I think one reason is because my grandfather raised the bar. He gave a good image of evangelists, you know, and because I'm Billy Graham's grandson, it opens up doors.
Yes.
And people love my grandfather. I've never met one person that didn't like my granddaddy. And I've heard him badmouth preachers or other evangelists.
Yeah.
And then they say, you know, then they figure out that I'm Billy Graham's grandson. Then they start, oh, well, I love your granddaddy, though. They change the subject real quick. But I've never met anyone that disliked my granddaddy. They always respected my granddaddy, whether they were Christian or not. And so, but it only opens up doors. It's opened up doors for me on political scenes. It's opened up doors for me internationally. It's opened up doors domestically with other churches, with other ministries. And I'm grateful for that. So I've not had a hard time being an evangelist. It's been easy because of my grandfather opened a lot of doors for me with a good name.
The book that we're talking about is loaded with these kind of questions that I've been asking. Time is gone for today, but there's so much more in this book. The title of the book is Redeemed, Devotions for the Longing Soul, with quotes and stories of Billy Graham. There's a lot of very interesting, inspirational things in this book. If you don't mind, we will... take another run at it next time.
Okay.
And go a little further in the content of this book.
Well, thank you so much.
I admire you greatly. You're doing a wonderful work for the Lord and following in your father's and grandfather's footsteps. And I want to hear more about that. Blessings to you.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Dobson.
This is Roger Marsh, and you've been listening to a fascinating conversation Dr. James Dobson had with Will Graham here on Family Talk. Learn more about the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association by going to our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. There you'll also find a link for Will's new devotional titled Redeemed. You'll find all that and much more when you go to drjamesdobson.org. Now, if you enjoyed today's broadcast, you can let us know by calling 877-732-6825. When you connect with us, you'll have the option to leave a message on our listener feedback line, or you can choose to talk with someone in our offices here in Colorado Springs. Our representatives will pray with you or help you track down any of our helpful resources. So remember, that number is 877-732-6825. Thanks so much for listening today. Join us again tomorrow to hear the conclusion of Dr. Dobson's interview with pastor and evangelist Will Graham. He'll share stories of his grandmother Ruth and his role in the popular Unbroken film. You won't want to miss that conversation coming up next time right here on Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Have a blessed day.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in to our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.